Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Financial woes in Europe and markets again on a wild ride. Obama tours the Midwest, talks jobs, and GOP presidential contenders hit the campaign trail this week. President Obama got out of Washington on a three-day bus tour in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, a new version of Yes, We Can.
There is nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed. What's broken is our politics.
Texas Governor Rick Perry jumped into the Republican fray this weekend, made some jaws drop right away with his superheated comments on Federal Reserve Bank Chairman Ben Bernanke.
I don't know what y'all would do to him in Iowa, but we would treat him pretty ugly down in Texas. I mean, printing more money to play politics at this particular time in American history is almost treasonous, in my opinion.
And some big downs on Wall Street and far beyond. The Dow down 420 points Thursday. Fear in Europe, fear in the U.S. Here, CNBC analysts take it all in.
No jobs plan.
Insufficient response to that sovereign debt.
Housing numbers were poor and the Philly Fed numbers were poor.
Morgan Stanley set the pace for the trading session, saying that the world's economies, including the U.S., are dangerously close to another recession.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Karen Tumulty of The Washington Post, Christian Freeland of Thomson Reuters, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. Joining me now from Washington is Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Karen, great to have you back.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. I always appreciate the invitation.
Happy to have you. Christian Freeland is with us from New York. She's editor of Thomson Reuters Digital. Christian, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Like Karen, I appreciate the invitation, too.
And hello, Jack. Good to have you here.
Hello, Tom, Christian, and Karen.
Let's dive right in on the economy. Who knows where the Dow will end up today? But as we sit here looking at what happened yesterday, carnage all over, and then in Europe and Asia overnight, Christian, what do you see happening with these markets? What is driving this latest plunge? Is it just the yo-yo? We're going to go up and down, or is there something serious here?
No, I think that it's more than volatility. I think that what has happened, and really, you know, this sentiment has crystallized since the debt ceiling debate, is a view that both the U.S. economy and the European economies are very, very weak. That, you know, I think that there's still a big debate on whether there's going to be an actual second recession, but that certainly recovery is incredibly fragile. And that political indecision in both Europe and the United States is contributing to that. And so investors are just saying, you know what, with these two big economies in the world so weak, it's not a great time to hold equities.
Not a great time to hold equities. And Americans looking across the pond at Europe, Christian, what do you see there? There's talk this week that, you know, Europe gets in trouble. Its banks hold all that sovereign debt. If that's in trouble, the European banks are trouble, and that may bleed back here to the United States. What about it?
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, it's easy to be frustrated with the lack of political decisiveness in the U.S., but Americans can take perhaps bitter comfort from the fact that things, I think, are even worse in Europe. The real issue in Europe is Germany is at the center of it all, and the Germans haven't quite yet reconciled themselves to the fact that if they want to save the euro, if they want to keep the euro as a currency, they're going to have to pay a lot of money. And that is just politically unpalatable in Germany. And that's why we've had so much wavering.
We'll look at that. Karen Tumulty on this side of the pond. What about it on Wall Street? Do you think this is just watching Europe and saying, uh-oh, what if that comes here? Or is it the numbers out this week on employment, on what, manufacturing out of the Federal Reserve in Philadelphia, saying the Atlantic seaboard there way down 30%+? Is this an American-born swoon this week on Wall Street?
Well, I do think that people are most nervous about Europe, and especially what happens, you know, whether that could sink the entire world economy. But you look at these numbers in the market, it's one thing you need to remind yourself, you know, for most Americans, this is not a real, you know, diminution of their wealth. I mean, the fact is that 80% of the wealth in the stock market is held by 20% of the people in the United States. But it does become almost a self-fulfilling prophecy to see these scary charts on the front page every day. Even if you don't have a lot invested in the stock market, it's going to make you a little more leery about going out and spending your own money. And, of course, consumer spending is what people need. People need consumer confidence to get the recovery going.
And, of course, Jack, that 20%, in the market that's not the rich, well, that's nevertheless probably the retirement savings of a whole lot of much lower income people, Jack.
Yes, and the college funds and also sort of the repository of national confidence, or at least the mark of it. You know, Keynes's animal spirits, which drive recoveries. It's nowhere to be seen. It's dejection and woe. This headline from the Financial Times: a raft of grim data from the U.S. economy. A raft of it. And there doesn't seem to be anything that's going to sink that raft in the short term. President out on the campaign trail, the Republicans, no big ideas being floated that I can see that are going to make a difference, and animal spirits flat.
We'll come back and look at how that's playing on the campaign trail and in the halls of power in this country. But let's stick with Europe for a second, because there's been so much wobbly feeling out of there lately. I mean, we've had our own share. But here's Simon Maughan, co-head of European equities at MF Global Securities, talking with Bloomberg Television yesterday from London, explaining how confidence in the European Central Bank, the ECB, was running thin.
And the market is taking on the ECB. It is saying, we don't believe you've got enough money to save Italy, to save Spain, and that's going to cause huge fractions in the euro, big problems for sovereign debt. And if your sovereigns have got problem, your banks have got huge problems.
The French leader and the German leader sat down this week, Sarkozy and Angela Merkel. Angela Merkel came out of the... Everybody was... Well, I don't know. Those in this game were hoping they would come out with some kind of euro bond, where all 17 countries were in together and guaranteeing bonds that would sit behind some of this shaky sovereign debt. German Chancellor Angela Merkel defended the idea for some more economic government of the eurozone, but not ready for euro bonds.
I think our propositions are perfectly adapted to regaining market trust, step by step. I think this is the right method, and I don't think that issuing eurobonds would be helpful today.
Wouldn't be helpful, and let's hear just a little bit here from French President Nicolas Sarkozy. He and Merkel proposed a new European economic coordination for financial and economic policies in the eurozone. Here's Sarkozy.
The first of these proposals consists in setting up true economic government within the eurozone. This economic government will be made up of a council of heads of state and government. Will come together twice a year, more if necessary, and will elect a stable president for 2.5 years.
French President Nicolas Sarkozy. Christian Freeland, Americans are not accustomed to having to sit and listen carefully to, you know, the bureaucratic planning of Europe. But in this case, it looks like it really has teeth in this direction. The Fed in this country warning about the links between banks there and banks here.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I would just for a moment, you know, I don't think that Americans should feel too sorry for themselves, since the whole world economy was tipped over the edge in 2008 by Lehman Brothers.
You're welcome.
So turnabout is fair play, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's absolutely the case. And you are absolutely right, Tom, to sort of point to the euro bond as being the central question right now. I think that if you had all of Europe, and that essentially means Germany and France, collectively guaranteeing euro bonds that were issued by separate European countries, then I think that this crisis would come to an end, because that would mean that Germany was, you know, essentially like co-signing the loans taken out by Italy and Spain. As long as Germany is reluctant to do that, markets are going to say, well, you know what, we're not sure that Italy and Spain are going to make it. And that means, you know, tremendous uncertainty.
Meanwhile, back in the USA, President Obama saying, well, Republicans saying they're going to turn everything upside down, do it different, do it better. President Obama is saying he's going to come back early September, just after Labor Day, with proposals to get the American economy back on track.
I'll be putting forward, when they come back in September, a very specific plan to boost the economy, to create jobs, and to control our deficit. And my attitude is, get it done. And if they don't get it done, then we'll be running against a Congress that's not doing anything for the American people, and the choice will be very stark and will be very clear.
Jack, we've just got a minute here before the break. We'll hear more from Obama, but the president says he'll propose this after Labor Day. Are you confident? Good is done. The American economy is back on the rails.
Not really. There are two big obstacles. One, the debt ceiling that limits the size of any stimulus, probably to $200 billion. And two, and more formidably, the Republican Party, which simply won't take yes for an answer. The president is going to include trade bills. He's going to include patent law change. He's going to include a tax cut in Social Security, to all of this, even through the tax cut and Social Security. Paul Ryan this week said, no, we don't want that. Of course, these are Republican ideas. In fact, trade bill and patent law, those are in the Republican jobs plan. And yet, when the president's for them, the Republicans are against them.
Karen, we'll come back and look at it. But is he going to propose something that can be passed and implemented, or something that won't be passed for Republicans that he can run on in 2012?
Well, I think that it's the latter, and he certainly telegraphed that with the last couple of sentences of his statement.
The president out on his own kind of trail this week in that big new black bus. Somebody called it the Darth Vader's helmet. Looked kind of spooky on the road. Nevertheless, it carried him here and there. He heard a lot in the upper Midwest on Wednesday in a town hall meeting in Atkinson, Illinois. Jan Lohaus asked President Obama about jobs and the gridlock in Congress.
I think you have done some improvement in jobs, but what can you do without Congress today to make a change in jobs and so we can see a growth in our in job opportunities?
Well, talk about a softball for the president. He came right back with this.
These are radical ideas. I mean, building roads, when did that become a partisan issue? Putting folks back to work. I mean, Eisenhower built the interstate highway system. Dwight Eisenhower built the interstate highway system. Last time I checked, he was a very popular Republican. You know, but this is what I mean about politics getting in the way sometimes. You know, you can't bring an attitude that says, I'd rather see my opponent lose than America win. You can't have that attitude.
Jackie's definitely back on the campaign trail there with on the road speak. But what about this strategy, Jack? As Karen Tumulty says, he'll probably put something out that Republicans will not embrace, you say yourself, and then head into the campaign season with that, saying, you know, hey, they're not doing what needs being done, no doubt. Does that work, Jack?
Well, you're channeling Harry Truman there. That's exactly
right.
The campaign he ran in 1948 against a do-nothing Republican Congress. What's the difference between then and now? Truman was saying, times are good now. You elect these Republicans and they'll take us back into the Depression. The Republicans are going to be able to say, Obama is the Depression. Change us and times will be good. It's just an entirely different circumstance. The Republicans can say, we're the out party. We're going to bring good times. This guy has brought the gloom.
And you're hearing that but already. Yes, please.
Well, I just think there's another agenda here on the part for the president, because mm-hmm. he did come out of the debt ceiling negotiations, I think, somewhat diminished, especially in the eyes of his own party.
Yep.
You know, a lot of Democrats were complaining that he had essentially been more of a bystander and a broker than a leader in those negotiations. So I think there's a real imperative right now for Obama to remind Democrats what it is he stands for. And I think that is going to be a major part of what we see him trying to do this fall.
Republicans ready to come out blazing, of course, on the economy. It's their big artillery at the moment. Here's former Massachusetts Governor, GOP candidate Mitt Romney. This is in Berlin, New Hampshire. On Wednesday, he spoke about Obama's track record with reporters at the Isaacson Structural Steel Company.
The president yesterday spoke about what a mess he inherited from George Bush. My goodness, the American people are tired about hearing what he inherited. They want to understand what he did with what he got. And unfortunately, what he did was make things worse, make it harder for the American people.
Make it harder for American people. And what about it? If Republicans get power, well, if Michelle Bachmann is elected, she told folks at a campaign stop in Greenville, South Carolina on Tuesday, gas prices are going to go way down.
The day that the president became president, gasoline was $1.79 a gallon. Look at what it is today. Under President Bachmann, you will see gasoline come down below $2 a gallon again. That will happen.
Gosh, that's amazing. That almost sounds magical, Chrystia Freeland. How do you do that?
Well, you could have a Great Depression, for example. That would probably bring commodity prices down.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, I mean, the thing that worries me, I think that your analysis, Tom and Karen's, is spot on. And that's exactly how the president is seeking to position himself. What really terrifies me about all of this is, you know, there's a real danger that this is all fiddling while Rome burns.
Yeah.
This is not a sort of ordinary campaign season. The whole world economy, at least the economy of the Western world, I think really is poised at the edge of a precipice. And I am just not sure that the world economy is going to be able to survive 18 months of politicking by the world's single largest economy, which is the U.S.
It is a scary, scary thought. We've got this super committee in Congress. Obama's saying this week they need to cut more than what they've been tasked to go out and do. But who knows how that's going to end up? Let's hear from our listeners. Stoneham, Massachusetts. Sam's calling. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here on the streets in the real world, I think people have known for a couple of years that all the integrity has been drained out of the financial system by finance. And, you know, I was thinking about it while I was waiting for you to get online here, is that,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys remember the SNL crisis, but, you know, thousands of people went to jail. They went after these crooks with a real vengeance. And I think it's not lost on anybody except the people in the playing the market that no one's gone to jail. And when that goes on for what started in 2008, we're going on 3 years now. I think it's filtering into the market that they can't keep this charade going anymore. They've bilked the world for every last penny, and it's not sustainable. And until the government does something to right this, and by that I mean it brings charges, takes these people to tasks, take these big banks, tear them to shreds, get rid of them, get rid of all the bad blood, nothing's going to change because people on the street have absolutely no confidence, and it's not trustworthy, and there's no integrity.
Sam, you're channeling a little bit of Chrystia Freeland there. I appreciate your call. We'll come back to it. Let me get one more right here. Brendan in Belchertown, Massachusetts. Brendan, you're on.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the markets are declining because the world is looking for the United States for leadership. And at this moment, we have a serious presidential candidate that's denying science, it's denying global warming in one hand and waving a pistol in the air, not unlike Saddam Hussein.
That may be a stretch, but I assume you are speaking of Rick Perry.
Yes. I mean, how can you have a serious presidential candidate that's denying the issues of the world? I mean, this is America. We need to be leading. We need to be projecting good thoughts, good plans for the future, promote justice.
Yeah.
You know, the American way.
Yeah, yeah. Lead,
and
please.
I feel like we're failing.
Brendan, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more and we'll look at them all. Don in Shopville, Kentucky. Don, you're on the air.
Yes, I wanted to say that I don't know which guest it was that said they're fiddling while Rome burns.
Chrystia Freeland, yeah.
I could not agree any more with that statement. It's like there's a fine line between using what's happening now for political gain on both sides, obviously. But everybody's just, it's like they're playing around, you know?
Yeah.
People out here without jobs, nobody wants to watch this happen.
Nobody wants to watch it happen, and yet it's happening. And one way or another, the American people are part of it because they're the voters who are being wooed. I mean, Karen Tumulty, what about it? If you look at the, I don't know if there's a back room anymore, but whoever's paying attention to who's being put forward here, right across the board for the next presidency, and there's a lot on the line here, Chrystia reminds us, and we hardly need reminding.
Well, it's a Democratic pollster, Jeff Guerin, a couple of weeks ago pointed me to a statistic that I think tells us more than any other. If you look back at the consumer confidence indexes going back to the early 1950s, there are only two presidential election years where it was as low as it is today. And those two presidential years were 1980 and 1992, which, by the way, also happened to be the only two presidential election years where an elected incumbent was thrown out of office. So I really do think that the uncertainty that people are feeling right now about this economy, that really is Barack Obama's chief opponent right now. It's not the governor from Texas. It's what people are seeing going on in their own lives.
Jack, new numbers out this week. I think it's just 26% of Americans expressing confidence in President Obama's leadership on the economy.
Those are dreadful numbers, and it's hard to see how they're going to get better given the weather that we can see coming. And the president's response seems to be, I think our caller is right, primarily a political one. He's going to send this jobs bill. The Republicans are almost certainly not going to pass it in total, probably not at all. And we will have gridlock, at least at that level for a year, with each party digging in and shooting volleys. While the economy continues to perhaps even hit stall speed, perhaps go back into a recession, you know, it really is. The president had a story and he dropped it. The story was the stimulus. Now that it's playing out, now that it's weakening, we see that that's what was keeping the economy going. That's what was just giving it that little bit of speed that it needed. And now when it's lifted, it's gone. And the word stimulus has become, it's like it's a foul word in Washington. Can't use it. And the president has lost his own story, really, I think.
Christian, you're listening to the Republican candidates on the stump at the same time, though. You know, what about what you're hearing there? Michelle Bachmann says $2 gas. I presume she doesn't think she doesn't want that to come via another Great Depression. What about the Republican recipe, broad stroke that you're hearing described? They're saying it will take us back to prosperity. Does that sound fact-based? Does that sound, you know, ideological faith-based?
Well, if you look at the lessons of the Great Depression, the main recipe that we're hearing from the Republican candidates, and we heard this during the debate, right, where there was that question about how much of a tax increase would you accept in exchange for severe spending cuts. The recipe is just cut government spending and that is going to be the solution. I think it's pretty hard to find mainstream economists who think that that's the answer. Even the American Enterprise Institute, which is, you know, a conservative think tank, did a study recently, and their conclusion was that the most successful deficit reduction plans, this is not even talking about how you get out of a weak economic slump, but the most successful deficit reduction plans were 85% spending cuts, 15% tax increases. So I think that it's hard, at least for me, to have a lot of faith in the economic plans we're hearing from the Republican candidates. But I do think they're doing one thing much more successfully than the Democrats are doing and than the president is doing. Mm. And that is tapping into not just a sense of uncertainty among the American people. Ordinary Americans aren't uncertain about the economy. They know that the economy is dreadful, and they are really, really scared. And I think they should be. And they're really, really angry. And I think that part of the reason that we're seeing the most sort of rhetorically forceful Republican candidates really catch fire the most is at least they're sort of channeling that anger. What surprises me is that you're not seeing anyone on the left who is doing the same thing.
Channeling fear and anger, not exactly a recipe for a beautiful democracy. And it got really rough out there this week. Rick Perry, well, let's just listen on a couple of fronts, and then we'll hear from, you remember him, Karl Rove. But here on the science of global warming was Rick Perry, first here in New Hampshire. This was on Wednesday at a campaign stop. Questioned that science.
And I don't think, from my perspective, that I want America to be engaged in spending that much money on still a scientific theory that has not been proven and, from my perspective, is more and more being put into question.
That sounds like more years of sort of George W. Bush on global climate and the issues, and that from the governor of a state that's got like tremendous 40 days over 100 degrees this summer, drought drying up all of its lakes. We'll hear in just a moment from W's, a campaign advisor, political advisor, responding to this, and we heard it at the top. But once more, here from Rick Perry at a campaign stop in Iowa. He was asked a question about Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve. His response led to a lot of criticism.
If this guy prints more money between now and the election, I don't know what y'all would do to him in Iowa, but we would treat him pretty ugly down in Texas. I mean, printing more money to play politics at this particular time in American history is almost treasonous, in my opinion.
I want to talk about that and hear from listeners, but let's hear first from Karl Rove, former advisor to President George W. Bush. This was him right away on Fox News on Tuesday, slamming the Texas governor for his comments on the Fed and Ben Bernanke. Here we go, Karl Rove.
It's his first time on the national stage, and it was a very unfortunate comment. You don't accuse the chairman of the Federal Reserve of being a traitor to his country, of being guilty of treason, and suggesting that we treat him pretty ugly in Texas. That's not, again, a presidential statement.
Karen Tumulty, he tamped it down later in the week. But what about that? And even Karl Rove coming out and saying that is not presidential.
Well, first of all, I think listeners should know there is absolutely no love lost between Karl Rove and his former client, Rick Perry.
Who became governor when George W. Bush went to the White House. Why no love lost there?
You know, there has been just a long-standing tension. It's an open secret in Texas between the Perry camp and the Bush camp. And it's in part, I think, because while to out-of-staters, these two guys may sound alike. You close your eyes and it can sound like George W. Bush talking. To people who in Texas who followed Rick Perry, he has a very different governing style and governing philosophy than George W. Bush did when he was in the state. And he also, in the last campaign, when he was the only governor to endorse Rudy Giuliani, Rick Perry said some very dismissive things about how George W. Bush had never been a true conservative. So, all of these things have built up some bad blood. But all that said, I do think that, you know, Rick Perry's entry into this race was very greatly anticipated. He came in with a lot of excitement, but he also, I think, came in a little too hot. I mean, he not only talked about climate change as something that he says science is walking away from, which is the opposite of the truth, but he referred to evolution as a theory that's out there. And, again, to accuse Ben Bernanke of treason, which is the only crime defined in the Constitution, and it is giving aid and comfort to the enemy and levying war on this country is how it's defined in the Constitution, really was an over-the-top comment. And, again, the kind of thing that in Texas, you know, might have not raised eyebrows.
I mean, after all, he talks secession in Texas, so maybe
right.
It's mild. Maybe that's mild Tabasco down there. Jack, what do you think, Jack? Does this heat up from here or simmer down?
It heats up, and woe to Mitt Romney. Governor Perry is a ferocious campaigner. He was down 20 points running for primary election to governor. He made that up and beat his opponent by 20 points, swing of 40 points on the basis of ferocious advertising.
Watch out all. Jack, Karen, Christian, please stand by. We're looking at a week in the news. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, furious winds brought down the main stage at the Indiana State Fair. Five people were killed and many more injured. It was terrible.
Are you okay? Are you okay?
Oh, God! Oh, God!
Prayers there. Hundreds gathered at San Francisco Rapid Transit BART stations to protest officials shutting down cell phone service to try to deter demonstration. Here's one unhappy rider.
When they're going to start, clamping down on the people's free speech and people's voice, then that's when I get offended and realize I need to come out and show my support.
And Michelle Bachmann, campaigning in Spartanburg, South Carolina, wished a big happy birthday to Elvis Presley. Unfortunately, it was the anniversary of Elvis's death.
Let's all say happy birthday to Elvis Presley today. Happy birthday!
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but step over my blue suede shoe.
Oh, boy. We're looking at a big week in the news. Markets dive again. Europe wobbles. Rick Perry makes his debut. Christian Freeland is with us from Thomson Reuters Digital in New York City. Karen Tumulty's here from The Washington Post, national political correspondent there. Our own Jack Beatty's here. A little more on politics. They're big this week. Mike is calling. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
What prompted me to call in was the Michelle Bachmann comment on $2 gasoline and just how crazy that is. Unless she wears a wizard cap, I don't see that happening.
Well, I mean, she's ready to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, to drill along the coast to really open things up and go. I don't know if that would do it, but she's ready to drill for oil everywhere.
It's a global commodity. I mean, China and India are growing. Whether or not if we find a Saudi Arabia gasoline underneath Missouri, gasoline might not even hit $2. You never know. But my point really is that I have a hard time taking the three candidates that are currently in the Republican race seriously. I mean, you have Michelle Bachmann, as I said earlier, but you also have Mitt Romney, who, interestingly enough, uses the word inherit to describe Obama's economic situation. He inherited it from George Bush. Mitt Romney inherited a great deal of money, which he used to build his business career.
Okay, but be fair, he made a lot too. If you want to look at it in just money terms, he did make a lot of money on his own, but yeah, he had his dad behind him with a big career in automotive.
And then you have Rick Perry, who is just a flashback of George Bush, as far as I'm concerned, without core Republican backing in our role.
So what's your point, Mike? I mean, you've got such a small percentage with confidence in the president. Obama's economic handling, maybe all that doesn't matter.
My point is, when it comes down to campaign, I don't think they can beat him. I don't think the three Republicans that we see right now can actually stand on a pulpit and debate with Barack Obama.
Let's pick it up. Karen Tumulty, first to you. With all the problems he's got on his plate here, our caller looks at the lineup of opposition and says they still, when it's one-on-one, he'll still take it.
Well, you know, I will go back to my point that I made earlier. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama's chief opponent is not any of these candidates. It is the state of the economy and how people feel about it. And I would just remind the caller that in 1992, George Bush was looking like he was riding high, so high that most of the big names in the Democratic Party decided not to run. And along comes this, nobody governor from Arkansas that nobody thought had a chance. I do think that it's the Republicans are looking for the candidate who can most take advantage of the conditions on the ground to make the case against Barack Obama. And, I do think that this field, given what the president is up against. I mean, presidential campaigns are all about growing as a candidate, developing mm-hmm. your message, and what these candidates look like now may not be what one of them looks like next summer.
Though those tape clips can hang around a long time. Jerry in Cooksville, Tennessee. Jerry, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I'll be like Yogi Berra. Before I say anything, let me say this.
Okay. all right.
Some of the few topics that you guys covered, with Michelle Bachmann saying happy birthday to Elvis, I mean, that was no big deal. I mean, the president, when he was running, said he'd been to 57 states. And had
absolutely, it's not a big deal. It's just fun, and we're having fun with it, Jerry.
Right, and like he said, she said she could lower the gas of, the price of gas, and he said he was going to lower the sea level. So, but anyway, getting to the Rick Perry deal, he said it was almost treasonous. And I'm glad you pointed that out. And Karl Rove said that, he found him guilty of treason. And, Karl Rove, I mean, he's really one to talk about.
Yeah, but almost treasonous. I mean, what about just take that on its own merits, Jerry? Bringing treason up in relationship to this esteemed economist who's presumably, working hard or trying to do what he thinks is best for this country. And we would treat him pretty ugly down in Texas. Now, we've heard of ugly. We know what ugly in Texas is. It's ugly. You may end up dead.
Well, I really don't think that he meant it in quite that way. And then the fact that Bill Clinton called him, he called him a rascal. Yeah. And I'm thinking about, Bill Clinton, he was, with his scortatory practices, it's kind of hard to call anybody a rascal,
Jerry, I appreciate your call. It is funny, Karen. I did hear Bill Clinton, I think, call Rick Perry a rascal. I don't know if that's just a political bonhomie.
I think he said he was a good-looking rascal.
A good-looking rascal. Now we're back in blue dress, blue shade, suede shoe territory. Okay, that's something else entirely. I don't know exactly what that means. If we can move the focus here just a little bit, another Clinton, very important Clinton right now in the spotlight this week, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. This was after President Obama put out a statement this week calling for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to step down. Here was the United States Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
The people of Syria deserve a government that respects their dignity, protects their rights, and lives up to their aspirations. Assad is standing in their way. For the sake of the Syrian people, the time has come for him to step aside and leave this transition to the Syrians themselves.
The U.S. for the first time saying go. It's time for Assad to go. Yesterday, CNN's Anderson Cooper spoke with Syria's ambassador to the United Nations, Bashar Jaafari. He asked the ambassador about the recent call for President Assad to step down.
I think this is an unacceptable statement coming from an important heavyweight administration in the world affairs. We were expecting the American administration to go in a different direction, actually.
Do you deny, though, that your president, his government, has imprisoned, tortured, and killed thousands of Syrian citizens in the past 5 months alone?
I deny categorically, unequivocally, all these wrong references to bloodshed and killings taking place in my country the way they are described by the media.
Christian Freeland, let's just start with the last statement there, denying categorically, unequivocally, all these wrong references to bloodshed and killings in my country. Now, he qualifies it slightly, the way they are described by the media. But, I mean, we had reports of the Syrian Navy bombarding one of its own cities this week. We've seen the video and the bodies. There's 2,000 dead, the United Nations is saying. Is there any doubt, Christian, being as objective as we can be without great access to this country, about the carnage, about carnage going on there?
Well, you're right, Tom, to point to the fact that, access is very limited. But I think that there is absolutely no doubt about the carnage that is going on. And really, what's happening right now in Syria is, the most horrible massacre of people by their own government that's happening anywhere in the world. I think that Secretary Clinton's statement was absolutely correct. I just regret that the U.S. hasn't come out more strongly much sooner.
This bombarding was in the town city of Latakia on the Mediterranean coast there. Syrian Navy bombarding its own people, apparently. It wasn't just the UN. Big neighbor Turkey speaking up. On Monday, Turkish Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoglu issued a harsh warning to Syria.
The unfolding events in Latakia yesterday and today cannot be excused. What happened here cannot be seen as Syria's own business with respect to human rights. Today we want to call on the Syrian regime once again. The operations against civilians that intensify in big cities should stop immediately and unconditionally.
Should stop immediately and unconditionally, but reports even today, Jack, even as we're speaking, that is not happening here. AP reporting yesterday's appeal from the U.S. and European allies also for Syria's Bashar al-Assad to step down may not be having much of an impact. Activists say forces today fired at thousands of protesters who poured into the streets around the country, killing at least another 10 people, soldiers, tanks, armored personnel carriers. What do you see going on here, Jack?
Well, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights presented a report, I think, just yesterday afternoon. I looked at it. When you just look at the details of this murderous regime, first of all, using tanks, heavy machine guns, personnel carriers, rocket-propelled grenades, putting people in one town, putting 26 men in a stadium, blindfolding them, shooting them, stabbing wounded people on the street, people wounded by guns, and even reports of people, security forces, putting injured victims alive in refrigerators in hospital morgues, freezing them to death, reports of torture of children as a way to put pressure on the parents. It's a devilish regime, and the response of the international community seems thus far to have been feeble, but at last something is being done. And this business on the oil sanctions, if the European Union goes along with it, this
not could buying really, Syrian oil.
That's right. That could really matter, because already there are reports that the Syrians are unable to pay civil servants. Well, if they lose more money, even more people will go unpaid, and crowds will increase, and that'll help destabilize the regime. In the meantime, more people will die. And the other thing here is what courage these people have. Demonstrations of 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 people turning out peacefully and protesting and standing up to tanks and helicopters These people are inspiring underneath all this evil.
And this in a country where they know what can happen when you go out in the street. They can see it any day. James in Concord, New Hampshire. James, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a point. When Hillary speaks, I think I really reflect on the choice that I made in the Democratic primary and the wrong choice that I made in supporting Obama up here in New Hampshire, shook his hand in Claremont, and I think we really see a contrast in their leadership styles, where Hillary is battle-tested, and so she speaks with a voice on the national stage, where Obama tries to be this transformational figure that doesn't get down and dirty with these regimes that really need the Iron Lady who's going to carry weight. And so I think when she carries through in the job today, I really wish I had seen her as a president rather than as a Secretary of State. I think she would have known how to handle this far-right intransigence.
Boy, a little buyer's remorse there from 2008. We note that fully and fairly. Let me ask you in very practical terms, though, James. Do you think the U.S. Coming out, Hillary Clinton coming out, speaking strongly on the Syrian president will make a difference there?
I think she makes much more of a difference when she speaks on Egypt, on Libya, on Syria, than when Obama speaks. And I wish, if anything, she was unfettered to speak more freely. I feel like this president expects her to perform a role, and she performs that role phenomenally. But if she was truly unfettered to speak with abandon,
yeah,
the way she once did in Saudi Arabia and in China, you know, for women's rights.
Yeah, Hillary unbound. Well, let me hold Siri for just a moment. Karen Tumbledy, just in brief, you hear the buyer's remorse there. Is Hillary Clinton definitely off the presidential stage here? Is that, you know, over for her, or can you see her coming back at some point, Karen, into that pursuit?
Well, it's hard to see. I mean, her coming back in 2016, just because at this point, I think there'll be a whole new crop of candidates out there. But it's worth pointing out that her statement on Syria was very much a reflection of the administration in which she served, and that it was time to coincide with President Obama's own statement calling for Assad to step aside.
It certainly was. Chrystia Freeland, what about it? The U.S. saying step down, most of Europe saying step down. Does it matter? Will it work?
Well, it's certainly better than nothing. What I would also like to see is the world really making clear to the Syrian elite that there will be, you know, no more bank accounts in London, no more homes in London, no more possibility to be part of the civilized world community. And I think, you know, the crucial thing right now is whether Assad is able to retain control of the security structures, which is so far what he's been able to do. And that's been the crucial difference between, for example, Egypt and Syria. So sort of any, you know, the battle, I think, right now isn't so much on the streets, where the government's control of its military means that despite all of the bravery of the Syrian people, it's a very unequal battle. If you can get divisions within the elite, within the power structures, that's going to be the decisive question. And that should be what the focus of international diplomacy is on.
Very quickly, let's turn to China. Vice President Joe Biden there this week. China, a huge player in the world economy and finance. Here's Chinese Vice President Xi Jinping speaking on the importance of cooperation between the U.S. and China.
Under the new circumstances, China and the United States share even broader common interests and co-shoulder more common responsibilities. Enhancing the China-U.S. relationship fits not only the interests of the two nations, but also that of the world.
He's gone on to say, nice words to hear, that the U.S. economy is highly resilient, has a strong capacity for self-repair. So he says, we believe the U.S. economy will achieve even better development as it rises to its challenges. Talk of U.S.-China working together there. But boy, oh boy, on Thursday in Beijing, members of the Georgetown University basketball team were on the court playing against the Chinese Army, kind of professional team, the Baiyi Rockets. It got very physical. Chinese, absolutely pounding in there. The U.S. team out on the floor, they were ultimately jerked. Just listen here. I mean, it was ugly. There was real emotion. You can see the video at our website, onpointradio.org. The U.S. team finally walked off. Game never completed. Christia, what does this say about the sort of energies running underneath this relationship? Or is this just boys on the court?
Well, it's probably a little bit boys on the court, but, you know, clearly there is a lot of tension. And I think that this is what the Chinese leadership is very scared of, actually, that, you know, the Chinese leadership is very concerned about peaceful rise. The Chinese people might be wanting to flex their muscles a little bit more.
We saw a lot of muscle on that court. Let's hope that's not the future. Christia Freeland with Thomson Reuters Digital, Karen Tumulty with The Washington Post. Jack, thanks to you all. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.